I used to say that what distinguished the Holocaust from all other genocides was the collaboration and implementation of the medical profession. Until now.
Hey everybody, Alex Newman here with Conversations That Matter. And as always, we have an incredibly special guest for you. You are not going to want to miss this. Her name is Vera Sharav, and she actually survived a Nazi concentration camp. And she has been very, very active in trying to prevent similar and related atrocities for a very long time. Now, she's been doing just incredible work. She is an advocate for human rights, of course. She's also the founder and president of the Alliance for Human Research Protection. This is an information resource and a public interest watchdog trying to stop the secrecy involving biomedical research and also to bring in some accountability. The organization has a very wide following. It's read by physicians, scientists, public health officials, journalists, lawyers, patient advocacy organizations, not just in the United States, but around the world. She has done extensive work on the dangers of mandatory vaccination, how this is a violation of human rights. She's testified before numerous public policy advisory panels and committees. She's been very outspoken on the abuse of psychiatry and psychology. In fact, one of the big projects that she worked on was trying to expose and ultimately stop the so-called President's New Freedom Commission that would have screened the entire population of the United States, starting with children, for real and imagined mental illnesses, alleged undetected mental illnesses. She has got some incredible victories under her belt. She was involved in the suspension of the Environmental Protection Agency's pesticide experiment on children. She filed complaints and involving the federal government and the use of children in foster care to use as guinea pigs for AIDS and vaccine trials, just absolutely horrific things that she has been involved in stopping. She suspended the violence prediction experiment that exposed children ages 6 through 11 to fenfluramine. Very, very bizarre experience that were going on. And we brought her on today to talk about some of the parallels between what was happening in Nazi Germany and what is happening today, not just around the world, but in the United States. Now, Vera, thank you so much for joining us. It's truly an honor to have you with us here. Let's talk about this, because I think a lot of people will hear, parallels with Nazi Germany, and they'll say, oh my goodness, here you go again, they're being way overblown. This isn't Nazi Germany. Are there parallels here, Vera?
Very much so. We're talking about parallels that were the prelude to the Holocaust. Holocaust didn't happen overnight. People think of Auschwitz always, but Auschwitz didn't come overnight. It was many years, and there were more than 5 years of the lead up until the actual extermination. So there are parallels along the way, and that's what one needs to really be alert to. And unfortunately today, history, the study of history, has taken a back seat. Mm-hmm. But people can't recognize patterns and similarities of policies that led to catastrophes.
So talk to us a little bit about some of the things that led up to the Nazi concentration camps. I mean, you lived in one for years as a little girl. You ended up there, I think, when you were like 3 and a half or so, and you spent 3 years there. You were only able to, that was in Ukraine. You're from Romania originally. But, tell us some of the background. How did a sophisticated, well-educated people like the Germans end up going down this just horrific, horrific route?
Fear and propaganda. Okay, those were the psychological weapons that the Nazis used and that we have been under for 2 years, fear and propaganda. So at that time, Jews were demonized as spreaders of infectious disease. And today, as we know, those who don't want to be vaccinated with an experimental injection are also demonized as spreaders of disease, even though there's no such evidence. So the other thing is censorship. A single narrative was allowed only. And anyone who deviated would be thrown into concentration camp prisons at that time. It's a dictatorship can only really function if they control all the sources of information. If people have access to information, they think. And thinking on your own is verboten in any kind of dictatorship. We're seeing it in China now. So the ominous signals that we have been living under, the dictates, government dictates, which are completely unjustified by any health or medical reason. It just wasn't there. It was a big lie. At that time, the lie was, yes, that the Jews were these demons. But really, the Nazis really had a greater vision. The Jews were the first enemies. They were the part that I lived through, of course. They didn't get to go to the broader plan that they had in mind. They wanted to conquer essentially Europe. And they wanted to exterminate after the Jews. It was supposed to be the Polish and then the Slavs. They had a whole plan until only the Aryans would be in charge, and that would be the Germans and Scandinavians. The British were supposed to be the slaves. So the plan was very ambitious, and some of the players today are the heirs to the Nazi regime.
Literally, right? I mean, there's like literally direct connections, huh?
Absolutely, yes.
Yep.
Klaus Schwab is an example.
Yep. It's terrifying. And that leads me to an obvious question, Vera. You know, a lot of people, I think, in America, even though they're not comfortable with the narrative, even though they're not necessarily comfortable with the demonization of the people who won't take the vaccines as like these disgusting, you know, dangerous individuals, you know, they can't imagine that our public health authorities, that the media, that they'd actually be promoting an evil agenda. You know, we look back at the Nazis, we say, wow, obviously they were evil. But, you know, Dr. Fauci, you know, doesn't he just want what's best for us? Maybe we don't agree with the way he's pursuing it. But do you think there is evil involved in this agenda that we're seeing play out now, Vera?
Absolutely. The documentation shows it. The documentation, there's a whole paper trail. Anthony Fauci has been at the helm there since 1984. He has been all along promoting policies that led to the slaughter of people, including AIDS. Mm-hmm. I was involved with the Black and Hispanic children, orphans, who were used for AIDS drug and vaccine experiments, which were absolutely horrific. That was Anthony Fauci's sponsorship. He worked together with the pharmaceuticals as he did today. There, it is a long line of this kind of giving over policies to people who then are completely not responsible, they're not being held accountable when those policies fail. That's the crime, really. In other words, you can understand, let's say, okay, he fostered a policy that didn't work, say I'm sorry and go on, but no, there's never any acknowledgement, and it only gets bigger and bigger, and now the entire human population globally is in the crosshairs. Before that, it would be specific populations, and there were always populations that were vulnerable.
What do you think the end goal is, Vera? And, you know, I agree with you 100% on this stuff with Dr. Fauci. We had Robert F. Kennedy on here and the information in his book. I mean, it's crystal clear. Fauci has been involved in monstrous crimes. This is not his first rodeo. But what do you think they're planning over the long term? What is their goal?
Well, it isn't what I think. I mean, it's documented. If you go on the World Economic Forum, you can read exactly what the Great Reset, or the other term is New World Order, is. And it's absolutely horrific. It's a dystopian slave civilization. I mean, it's really the end of civilization. Essentially, the vaccines are really only a way to get people to have a digital ID. The digital ID, that green passport, so-called, is the gateway to enslavement. And in the Nazi time, Hitler relied on IBM. Without IBM, there would have not been 6 million deaths of Jews. And of course, there were so many more others, but Jews particularly were targeted. IBM conducted census because Hitler wanted to know every Jew that lived in Germany. So it began in Germany and then went to the occupied countries. And they had a punch card system, which was the precursor to the computer. They identified every Jew in Europe. They registered them into this system, and they had the information about them, about their assets, their work, where they lived, of course. And then once they had that registration of every Jew, that's when the real Holocaust kind of began, because then once they were identified, they were isolated, eventually deported. First, it was a matter of not allowed to work. The first place they were, the Jews were kicked off, were universities. And then they weren't allowed to own property anymore. So everything was taken away. And eventually, 1938, passports were taken away. And the exits were closed. To Jews could not travel anymore. So IBM had the train schedule set so that trains would deliver the victims and leave empty to bring new victims. It was an assembly line industrial genocide, the first of its ever kind. What is similar as far as parallels, in addition to the IBM part, is the total collaboration of the medical scientific establishment. They, without the doctors at every step of the way, doctors made the selections. And the killings really began with the selection of disabled German infants and children under the age of 3. About 1,000 of them were medically murdered in hospitals that were designated to do that function. And then it was the mentally ill and the nursing home residents. This was, the program was called T4, Aktion T4. They used the opportunity also to test all kinds of methods of killing, including Cyclone B, the gas that was then used in the gas chambers. So this was a very, very methodical plan, protocol, medical murder. This has never happened before. And this, I used to say, that what distinguished the Holocaust from all other genocides was the collaboration and implementation of the medical profession. Until now, what we saw in March and April of 2020 was the slaughter of nursing home residents in all Western European countries, United States, Canada, Australia. These are the wealthiest countries in the world, and they used the COVID pandemic as an opportunity to get rid of the economic burden. This is the what eugenics looks like. This is what eugenics is, and this is what drove the Nazis as well as the fascists here. This is eugenics. Eugenics is an elitist ideology that regards some human beings as biogenetically inferior. And it creates a two-class apartheid system where the ones who call the shots, the rulers, are the supermen. They regard themselves as a superman. The Nazis regarded themselves absolutely as, they called it Übermensch. And the current cabal, and it is a cabal, I'm not talking about a conspiracy theory, I'm talking about a reality and evidence, not a theory. They too are deluded into believing that they are superior and entitled to tell the rest of us how to live, what to put into our bodies, and to create a surveillance state where they will be able to survey our movements 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all remotely, click, click. They won't need the kind of Nazi paraphernalia. Oh, no. This will be very, very technological. Use only tech to do the dirty work. This is what the kind of future that they are envisaging for all of us, and we have no say suddenly. What happened to democracies? The same thing, Hitler in 1933, when he took over, he suspended the Constitution and all civil rights, and from then on ruled with executive order. And that's what we saw in 2020.
Yeah, the parallels are indeed extremely concerning, Vera. You know, before I ask you what we do about this, and I do want to get to that, what is the role of psychiatry in all this process? I do another show called Behind the Deep State, and my latest episode was about the weaponization of psychiatry, the abuse of psychiatry by totalitarian governments. How significant do you think psychiatry and psychiatric medications and diagnoses are in this process? What's the purpose of them? And why isn't this something that's more talked about?
Well, for many years, I was immersed in that as far as psychiatry, the abuse of psychiatry in the United States. And this has been going on since World War II. The end of World War II actually accelerated the experimentation and the use and labeling of people with psychiatric disorders. Now, there is really no such thing as a verifiable psychiatric condition. There's no blood test. There's nothing objective. It is all by questionnaires. Now, what happens, anyone who's been in the system for a while and has had changes in their doctors, they'll have different diagnoses all over the place.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing concrete. And unfortunately, yes, people have problems. People have all kinds of mental breakdowns and all of that, but it doesn't mean that it's that it is a condition for which you have to use all kinds of invasive, whether it's drugs or whether it's electric currents. I mean, some really horrible kind of interventions have been used on psychiatric patients. In their day, lobotomies were considered by the New York Times as the greatest thing that ever happened. One of the things that is very similar with psychiatry and public health altogether and eugenics is that they can dictate, they work with the government. The government provides them a legal safety net, sort of, to do what they're doing. And then they use police to enforce. And we've seen that's what lockdowns were about. psychiatric patients have all really all along been the psychiatrists look at psychiatric patients as damaged goods. They despise them. They want to test out different ways to fix them, to do something different with them. And so the experiments that they do are pretty horrible because nobody is really stopping them. And the government gives them the imprimatur to do it. It is the darkest area, you know. In fact, I found evidence in 1942, the same time that the experiments were going on at Dachau and Auschwitz. They did freezing experiments on psychiatric patients at the University of Cincinnati, at Yale. Yeah, freezing experiments, okay? Because they didn't consider these psychiatric patients as human beings. That's the danger. When some level of society can designate other human beings as non-human, subhuman, is the way the Nazis called them. Worthless eaters was their term. They give themselves permission to do things to these people that, of course, should never be done, neither to humans nor animals.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you breaking that down for us, Vera. Before we let you go, I want to know, what can regular people do to combat this? I mean, how should Americans and people in other countries be responding to these very disturbing parallels that you drew attention to, these mandates, this constant fear propaganda, the abuse of human rights? What do normal people do about this?
Disobey. Say no. That's your strength. We are the many. There is absolutely no excuse for us to give in to dictates that are wrong, that we realize are wrong. Why obey? This was one of the things that also not much talked about, but during the Holocaust, Jewish leaders didn't believe that Hitler meant what he said. So they advised their people, their congregations, not to panic, but to obey. And as we know, that was a catastrophic mistake because the Jews had a chance for a while, for 5 years, they actually had a chance to get out of Germany. And they didn't. Some did. And we do have, you know, there was immigration to here, but most didn't. And then Hitler closed the borders and took away the passports. And that was when they were trapped. So one needs to understand when government tells parents to vaccinate their children and parents obey without thinking, without looking at evidence, without making decisions that they as parents are obliged to, that's their responsibility. That's a crime. And parents, there will be many parents, I'm afraid, who will not forgive themselves when their children are harmed, because many children are already. When have you heard of little children getting heart attacks?
Or strokes.
Strokes.
Yep.
And it's happening. Mm. It's happening by the thousands.
Yep.
And to look away, to shield yourself with willful ignorance is a crime.
Yeah, well, we couldn't agree more here, Vera. I want to thank you so much for sharing your incredible insights with us. Thank you for all the work that you've done. Your website for the folks out there that want to follow you and get signed up is AHRP. That's the Alliance for Human Research Protection, AHRP.org. www.ncpsychology.org. Are you on social media, Vera? Is there any way for people to follow you on any of these platforms?
It's being worked on. I'm not very good at technology. That's one failing. I'm sorry, but I can't do it all.
Well, we understand. Well, Vera, I want to thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for all that you're doing. We really appreciate it. And you have an open invitation here anytime you have something to say. So thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. All right, folks, that was Vera Sharav, a Holocaust survivor, incredible advocate of human rights, has been doing so much important work in the field of medical ethics and voluntary and informed consent and all these other fields. Go check out the website, get involved. Folks, these parallels are not just, you know, something to look at and then ignore. These are very, very serious warning signs. These should be alarm bells flashing. So share this interview out, email it to your friends, to your doctors, to your families, to the people in your circle of influence. Stay tuned, subscribe here to The New American. Go to our website at thenewamerican.com, get signed up on all our channels, get the print magazine. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm Alex Newman. This is Conversations That Matter. Until next time, God bless you all.